Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
From Vermont Public Radio, this is the podcast of Vermont Edition, where you and VPR consider the unexplored angles of the news. Vermont Edition is produced by Vermont Public Radio and webcast at vpr.net. This podcast is made possible by VPR and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a contributing member at vpr.net.
And this is Vermont Edition on VPR. Good afternoon, I'm Steve Zind. When it comes to part-time residents per capita, Vermont is one of the country's leaders. In recent years, there's been a boom in the second home building and buying market and out-of-state purchases of land in Vermont. And many people see this trend as a mixed blessing.
The people who have vacation property here may not have that kind of connection to the community.
That's the town clerk of Newark, Vermont. We'll hear more from her in a moment. We'll be talking today about the effect of the second home market on Vermont. Their owners do pay a higher property tax rate and in many cases don't use the services their taxes pay for. But they're also willing to pay high prices for property, and that can drive a town's property values way up, along with housing costs. According to a report by the Vermont Housing Finance Agency, the median price of a single-family home is about $200,000 in Vermont. That's up 97% since 1996. And there's also the effect that this increase in part-time resident has on a town's sense of community. We'd like to hear from you on these questions today at 1-800-639-2211, or we welcome your emails at vermontedition@vpr.net. Now, second home development is nothing new for the traditional resort areas like Manchester and Dorset, Stowe, and the communities of the Mad River Valley. But now we're seeing it in places that until recently haven't seen many out-of-state second home buyers. The Northeast Kingdom town of Newark is one of those places, and we talked this week with longtime town clerk Joan Bicknell.
In the last probably 7 years or so, there's been a big increase in prices.
And, you know, we're talking about a very small town, yes. Population around 500. So are we talking about a significant number of properties or a relatively small number?
We used to be owned more than half by out-of-towners, but a lot of the non-resident property that was owned by people from Vermont. But now I think that that statistic has changed dramatically. And so I think we have a lot of people who are buying in who are not from Vermont, or we have people who are coming here to retire.
And those people are willing to pay more money for these properties,
yes,
than perhaps the Vermonters,
yes,
would pay. And is this primarily, are we talking about tracts of land, or are we talking about existing homes?
No, we're talking, that's one of the interesting things that's happened is that Newark is a hill town, and we have a couple of mountains that are fairly inaccessible. They're long private rights of way that go up, and so we've had a lot of hunting camps up there, things like that. And traditionally, those pieces have sold for less per acre because they don't have electricity and they're more remote. The access to them, especially in the winter, isn't very good. And so they were assessed for less money per acre. But what we've had happen is those remote properties have become more desirable, and they tend to be in larger pieces of land. And people have paid a lot more. So it puts pressure on, but because of the state school funding and having to keep our grand list at 100% or as close to 100% as we can of value, we've had to reappraise twice in the last 3 years to try to keep up with the kinds of properties that generally we didn't think that much of, in a way, mm-hmm. because they were more remote. And they're being bought up for huge prices.
How is that affecting your average Newark resident's budget and pocketbook then?
Oh, it's hurting them. It's hurting them because we still do have people in town who own their residential property, but then they also have another piece of property either tucked up on a mountain or in the woods or on one of the ponds, but they have to pay a non-resident rate on the other piece of property. So because their values have continued to escalate, and as their values escalate, we've found that our school rate keeps jumping and jumping. So the taxes have gone up.
What do you think's driving this trend? Why do people want to buy property in Newark, Vermont?
Because we're remote. Because I think part of it was after September 11th, we saw people wanting to buy, to have kind of a getaway place. I think that became more important after people saw how vulnerable they could be in population areas. So I think that hurt. We also are next to Burke Mountain Ski Area, which has recently had a lot of publicity about the Ginn Corporation putting in an 840-family gated community.
Is all this creating any tension between longtime local residents and these new seasonal residents?
Absolutely. Well, I don't think between the residents there's so much of a problem. The people who have retired here, who have come here to retire and live, even if they've paid a lot of money for their property, at least they're living here. I think there are people who feel that that they have a stake in the community. But the people who own property as a second home don't have a stake in the community and a stake in the school. And the people who have vacation property here may not have that kind of connection to the community.
Now, you could argue that these people who are buying these tracts of land and just for seasonal use, they're not actually living there full time, that, you know, they're paying taxes, but they're not using the services.
Right. And that's always been true in town. But now with the new way that the state does the school funding, that's kind of changed whether that's really a benefit to us, because as the values of our property in town go up, we get less help for the school, or we have to pay into the school fund. And trying to keep up with the property values has become a huge financial burden for the town. You know, we did a reappraisal 2 years ago, and then we had to redo the land schedule this year, so it was like another reappraisal.
And that's costly for the town?
It's very costly for the town and very costly in goodwill and good feeling and community spirit.
Do you think it could potentially reach the point where some people in Newark might say, I can't afford this anymore, and find another place to live?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think that will happen. I don't think it's happened so much in the residential market, because where would anybody go unless they move to the Arctic, perhaps? I mean, I think these property values are high everywhere.
Joan Bicknell is town clerk in Newark, Vermont. She made a number of points about the impact second home buyers are having on her community, and we'd like to hear your comments on what she said. We welcome your calls and emails. If second home buying is happening in your town, tell us what it's meant for your property values, the ways in which it's affected your community, whether it's created any tension. Or maybe you're a second home owner. We'd like to hear from you, too, on these questions. Vermont taxes your home at a higher rate than primary residences. How do you feel about that? As a seasonal resident, do you feel part of your community? Call us at 1-800-639-1800. 1-800-639-2211 or email us at vermontedition@vpr.net. 1-800-639-2211 or vermontedition@vpr.net. We're going to talk now with Jeff Wilson. He's the former town manager in Manchester. He filled that post for about 17 years, and he also served on the board of directors of the Vermont League of Cities and Towns. Jeff Wilson, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Nice to be with you, Steve.
Thanks for making the time for us today. Now, Manchester, as we know, has been attracting second home buyers for years. What brought them to Manchester in the first place?
Well, Manchester is a beautiful community and has the reputation of being a Four Seasons resort area back to the 19th century. Going back to Robert Todd Lincoln and some of the landed gentry back then. So
he was kind of the original second home buyer in Vermont.
I think he was indeed, and he certainly built a nice second home, to say the least, Hildene. But it's had that reputation, and the ski areas, you know, from the 50s on brought a new aspect of recreational opportunity. And So there's been a long history. A number of second homes have been built, certainly in the 80s and 90s. They're still coming. There's more areas being developed. Mm-hmm. And Manchester and Vermont in general is a special place. And I think Joan was entirely right. We saw an upsurge after September 11th. People wanted to escape the metropolitan New York, Boston areas. And there's no better place to escape to, in my opinion, than Vermont. Mm-hmm.
Well, when you look at, you know, all the years you've been in Manchester, both as a town manager and as just a local resident, how would you assess the ways in which the influx of second home buyers have changed the community, good and bad?
Well, you know, like most things in life, it's a double-edged sword. And that debate was been going on fairly vociferously in the 80s and lit up somewhat in the latter 90s. I guess people just sort of got used to it. But a lot of people have seen economic benefit associated with second homeowners coming into the community, and that's obviously builders, tradespeople, obviously realtors, insurers, local lumber company, hardware stores, et cetera. So they've seen that economic activity and viewed that in a positive sense. From a taxation perspective, you know, as Joan said, that could be problematic if you look at it in the light of Act 60 and 68, possibly as a municipality. But statewide, I guess you'd have to really, I think most would concur, it's a benefit anytime you get folks to pay into a system of taxation without using those services, especially educational services. It's got to be A plus.
Would you say on balance that second home buyers use a lot less services than full-time residents? Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the big one obviously is education. Education typically is, you know, 75-80% of the tax levy in a community. They don't have kids going to the local schools, so they aren't using any services there. But even when it gets down to other types of services, police, fire, rescue, things of that nature, less demand associated with that on the municipal side of the equation.
Talking to Jeff Wilson, who's former Manchester town manager, about this issue, the impact of second home buyers in Vermont. Many more have been coming over the last decade or so, although Manchester is a place that's seen a good second home business for many years. Let's take a call from Jeff in Middlesex. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I wanted to make a comment about the services. I realize the education side of it, the second home buyers don't utilize. But as far as fire, police, road department, second home buyers certainly do use those, whether they're there or not, because most of them have automatic alarms. And whether they're tripped by accident or just there happens to be a fire and to go there, they're still using those services. The other thing is that depending upon where the residence is, they may very well pay a lower tax rate. I know in Middlesex, when we bought our property 12 years ago and then moved up here, we actually paid a lower tax rate until we became residents. And I would hazard a guess that a lot of the areas like Stowe and those high tourist areas, that the tax rates for the second home buyers are actually lower than the local residents have to pay. And I think the fair equity would be that nobody, second home buyers, would pay a lower tax rate than the current tax.
Jeff,
whether they use education or not.
We're losing you, I suppose, on a cell phone connection or something. But Jeff Wilson, you picked up some of his comments.
Yeah, I mean, that's true as far as the idea that non-residents are paying a lower tax rate in some communities than the permanent residents. I don't think that was what was contemplated originally when Act 68 was passed. But you've seen a change in the last couple of years, how that is tipping the other way. I believe Dorset may be one where there's the residential tax is higher than the non-resident tax. Manchester is about the same, but there are other communities throughout the state where you're seeing things change. And I guess on a macro basis, the legislature and the governor will probably have to take a look at that sometime soon.
Here's Irv in Norwich. Irv, thanks for waiting.
Thank you. First, I wanted to echo the comment that just been made. What makes the residential tax rate go up is the amount spent per pupil. And there are at least 80 towns across the state where the residential school tax rate is higher than the non-resident rate, because the non-resident rate is uniform across the entire state, adjusted only for property valuation to 100%. The second point is that because spending per pupil is what drives school tax rate, when somebody buys a home that has been housing school children, a complete family, in the center or the edge of a town, and that residence no longer houses a family with school children, the number of children in the school may go down. And as the number of children in the school goes down, the tax rate goes up. There are some communities where this is becoming a serious problem. And it's a difficult communication problem between residents and non-residents, because non-residents say, well, we aren't using the schools. How on earth can you complain about that? But the fact is that when the population tilts and has a decreasing number of residents, year-round residents, that school costs can go up, school taxes can go up enormously, even though school services aren't being used by these newcomers.
Good point, Irv. Thanks for the call. Jeff Wilson, comment?
Yeah, Irv is right, and as everybody's probably learned over the past decade or so, there's a number of moving pieces with Act 60 and 68, and a lot of unexpected dynamics, and that's one of them. I mean, it's important if you want to keep taxes down to make sure that per student expenses remain relatively low. Easier said than done. And if your student population declines and your expenses stay even, then taxes will go up. There's got to be, I think, some additional, and there has been, but there's got to be a little more discussion about cost containment, because that's what's driving a lot of the property tax rates for the residential taxation these days. And maybe that'll mean something even as outrageous in Vermont as regionalizing schools to some degree. But,
and, you know, Jeff Wilson, one of the things we hear about towns like Manchester is about the effect of second home buying on housing costs overall, and how it pushes people who actually work in the town to outlying communities because they can't afford to live in that town anymore. Is that something that is something I know that's been seen in Manchester? To what extent?
Absolutely seen in Manchester over a number of years. We've seen a dramatic change, I think, in the past 20 years where we've witnessed many people who are longtime natives, their children, simply cannot afford to buy a home in Manchester. There's, you know, it's location, location, location. Not only do a lot of folks want to live there as full-time residents, but you have the added market impact of second homeowners driving up prices. So what we've seen is a number of folks who either selling out or their children just simply being forced to move out of Manchester, relocate or locate to, you know, surrounding communities such as Rupert, Pollitt, Danby, Arlington, or Sunderland. Mm-hmm. And it's a real issue, some significant socioeconomic impacts on the community.
We and some of the earlier callers have been sort of focusing on some of the perhaps detrimental impacts of second home buying in Vermont. Just as someone who is Manchester town manager, Jeff Wilson, you mentioned earlier some of the economic activity that's derived from second home buying. Just in terms of contributions to the community at large, do you see that happening from that group of people who call Vermont their second home?
We see some of it. Obviously, I think most folks in most communities would like to see more. There's been important second home owner contribution to the arts, some of the cultural activities in the community. I'm the president currently of the local public library. We'd like to see, although we have a lot of folks who are second homeowners use our services, we would love to see some additional contribution by those folks in a monetary sense. But like anywhere, I suppose many of those people, their primary efforts when it comes to community mindedness and civic participation probably is directed at their, you know, in their primary place of residence. But we do see some important contributions, and some people do get very involved in the community.
Jeff Wilson is the former town manager of Manchester, was also on the board of directors of Vermont League and Cities and Towns. Stay with us, Jeff. We just want to bring in Ken Libby into the conversation. Ken Libby is a longtime Stowe realtor. Hi, thanks for making time for us today.
You're welcome.
You've been there, as we said, for a long time. We're hearing that the housing market is cooling off nationally. In fact, that just a story this week talked about how it's slumping in Vermont. The statistic given was that new housing construction has dropped 44% in just over a year. Are you seeing sort of a parallel slump in the second home market, Ken Libby?
No, I don't think we are. And nationally, last year in 2006, the second home market was actually up 11%, which so it's different than the primary market in our marketplace in Stowe. I did an analysis this morning for your benefit, and we're right on track this year to have the same number of sold properties that we had in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
The inventory has increased, and the asking prices have come down. But interest rates remain at 6.25%, give or take a point or half a point or so. So the buyer's sense now is a good time to buy. So the market's very active.
Where are these second home buyers coming from primarily?
Primarily Boston to Baltimore. There's a significant amount from the UK and, of course, Canada with the Canadian dollar getting back to almost parity. In the UK, of course, the pound is 205 today, so somebody can double their size of their house with half the price. But Boston to Baltimore is the primary.
What are they looking for in terms of a property? Are they looking for land to build on or existing houses?
Pretty much existing houses. We don't have a lot of land available to build on. And 90% is existing housing. Maybe even higher.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a full-time Stowe resident. You're a former police chief, from what I understand.
Yeah, I've been here since 68, and I retired as police chief in 92.
Somebody was mentioning earlier there was a little discussion about the kinds of services or demands on services that second home residents expect. Do they place a demand on services that's perhaps more than we might imagine because they're only part-time residents?
Well, being a year-round resort area, we have a fairly significant demand regardless. As you may know, Stowe does about 62% of its income stream in the summer months. And that puts pressure on the police department, the fire department, rescue squad, et cetera. The roads need to get plowed, whether it's a second homeowner or a primary homeowner. So I think given the amount of taxes that most of these folks are paying, that the pressure is not so much from the second homeowner as it is from the tourist nature of the community.
Ken, we've got a call from one of your neighbors, Beverly in Stowe, who has a comment to make. Hi, Beverly. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking the call. And hello to Ken and to Irv and the Jeffs. This has been a great discussion. I'd like to talk about my experience. We bought our property 10 years ago. And like so many of the people who grew up in Stowe, who can no longer afford to live here, we're starting to experience that same. And isn't that interesting? We have our house on the market. It's been a wonderful experience here, but it is for sure the truth that the hills are alive with the sound of money. So that's sort of... that's sort of my take on it. It has been glorious, but I fear that pretty soon there will not be a town. It will just be a resort. There won't be natives living here.
And Beverly, are you talking about your property taxes?
I am.
That's what's creating the pressure.
I am. That is the big crunch right now for us, and we're happy to pay taxes.
Can you give us a sense in that 10 years of, percentage-wise, let's say, what sort of increases you've seen?
Well, let me say this, that when we moved here in 97, hold on just a second, Mark. Oh, well, we're talking about property taxes.
Yeah.
We could afford it, but now I think they've tripled.
Yeah.
Maybe quadrupled.
So what if you imagine going somewhere else, is it just to a nearby community or is it out of state?
That is actually it. And we're of an age, we're at that what's next phase of our life. And so we're thinking about not shoveling so much snow anymore, so much.
Well, that's a different issue.
So we want our cake and we want to eat it too. And we want to be in Vermont forever and a day in the summer and maybe for part of the winter.
Uh-huh.
I'm telling you my life, and I've been really enjoying hearing other people's comments.
Thank you,
well,
Beverly.
Thanks for being there for us.
All right.
Bye.
Ken Libby, I don't know if you heard all of Beverly's comments there, but are those comments you're hearing from a lot of people in Stowe?
Comments are 100% valid. The state tax policy is unconscionable. My property taxes on my house when Act 60 passed were $4,200, and this year they're $13,000. And I've done nothing different. And it's driving solid citizens out of Stowe to Morrisville, Elmore, where have you. I sold a house over the weekend, last Friday, here in Stowe to a family from New Jersey who are moving in full-time, and the folks that had the house for many, many years moved to Hyde Park. So it's a regular occurrence.
And
the sad part of it is Stowe... When I moved to Stowe in 68, there was only four hotels open in the summertime. There was no summer business. And because of the volunteerism within the community, we were able to build up our summer business. And it was all built on volunteerism. All the events, all the special events that draw people take a lot of volunteers. Those volunteers are moving to other towns. And I fear for the lack of... the community that we may see in 10 years.
Do you see that manifest now in Stowe, and can you give any examples of that kind of erosion in sense of community?
Well, not in the sense of community. Fortunately, and I think the gentleman from Manchester made the same comment, fortunately, so far, knock on wood, a lot of the folks that buy second homes get participatory in the community real quick. Many of them buy it with the concept that this will be their final move, and mm-hmm. someday this will be their final...
They'll be full-time residents at some point.
Full-time residents. Yeah. And so many, many, many of them get involved in the community immediately, in the arts or in the craft shows or in some of the events. Yeah. And as long as that keeps happening, we'll be all right. But if we continue to see an escalation, that may not occur. Mm-hmm. As an example, In 2005, we were seeing houses on the market an average of 136 days. And they were, selling at a mean of about 475. And this year, that mean is up over 500.
Ken Libby, we're going to go back to Jeff Wilson in just a moment, but maybe you can answer Michael's question. He emailed us from Wilder, and he's sharing these concerns about the increase in property and house values as a result of the high prices being paid by people moving in from out of state. And he wonders what can be done to ensure that young Vermonters have access to affordable, decent housing at a fair price while balancing out our tourist economy. Is there any, how difficult is it for a young couple to buy a house that's worth, let's say, the median price, $200,000?
In Stowe, it's extremely difficult because there's not much on the market for $200,000.
But if there were, are there programs that a young couple would have access to?
There are programs. They're not as plentiful, perhaps, as they ought to be. The Vermont Housing Finance Agency is fantastic for a first-time buyer, mm-hmm. and that's a program that we look at a lot. And we even have some properties that will fit the march here in Stowe. But when we get to the outlying communities of Morrisville, Elmore, Wolcott, Waterbury, those programs come into effect mm-hmm. significantly.
Ken Libby, we appreciate your making the time today.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
Ken Libby is a longtime Stowe resident. Also with us for the remainder of the conversation is Jeff Wilson, former Manchester town manager. You're still a resident of Manchester, Jeff?
That's correct. Yeah.
And so what about your own property taxes and the effect that rising property values have had on them?
Well, they've gone up quite a bit. There's no doubt about that. And it's not just property values. There's obviously been a sea change in communities like Stowe and Manchester with the advent of Act 60 and 68. Obviously, now there's no more local grand list. It's a statewide grand list that when it comes to the education funding. And so our taxes are quite a bit higher than they used to be. And still paying them and still enjoy living in Manchester. I want to try to continue to do that.
All right. Jeff Wilson, thank you very much for joining us today.
A pleasure. Enjoyed it.
Jeff Wilson is former town manager of Manchester, was also on the board of directors of the Vermont League of Cities and Towns. This is Vermont Edition on VPR.
Funding for VPR comes from our contributing listeners and Efficiency Vermont, partnering with retailers to offer rebates on Energy Star dehumidifiers and air conditioners. EfficiencyVermont.com. From Marlboro College Graduate Center, Brattleboro, Vermont, hosting the This Is Your Year open house Saturday, August 4th, gradcenter.marlboro.edu. And Gardener Supply, providing natural solutions and creative ideas for garden enthusiasts, open daily at the Intervale and Taft Corners locations. Visit the VPR website to subscribe to the podcast of Vermont Edition and listen to MP3s of the program. Just go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. While you're there, you can give us your feedback on the program and submit real-time questions to guests. You're listening to Vermont Edition on VPR, Vermont Public Radio.
Patricia Whalen of Westminster has been a Vermont Family Court magistrate since 1990. She's also done a lot of work in training women judges from Afghanistan, but now she has a new assignment. Whalen has been selected as an international judge assigned to the War Crimes Chamber at the court in Sarajevo, the capital of Bosnia-Herzegovina. The court is part of the ICTY, the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. I asked her to describe the job she's about to undertake.
Well, I've been appointed as an international judge, and it is a tribunal panel that hears the cases. So there are two international judges that sit with a judge from Bosnia and Herzegovina.
How many cases are before this court right now?
There's many cases. I know that the court is already feeling overwhelmed. One of the things that the international judges bring to this is really looking at different ways to manage cases and manage these complex criminal trials so that they can do them in a relatively short period of time. As you know, one of the major criticisms of the ICTY is the length of time that it took to try something. And Sarajevo has similar problems. And, of course, the need to translate documents, the need to prepare witnesses and find witnesses and all sorts of just, you know, kind of human management problems probably beleague both courts. But the really exciting thing about what's happening in Sarajevo, and this, I think, is the real gift of this court, is that, you know, the people in the country can come and be part of these trials. They can come and see them. And that's not what has been happening at The Hague. So it's very difficult for people to get there, very expensive for people to get there. So this is a model, I think, for addressing these kinds of crimes so that a community can be witness to it.
You've pointed up one of the criticisms that sometimes arises when these tribunals are working, and that is the length of time it takes the process to play out. Another is that the people who are truly responsible for the atrocities that are being investigated tend to escape the judicial process while their underlings are tried. In this case, is that happening in this court?
I think that, you know, complaint can be laid at the foot of every war crime tribunals. You know, it can even be laid in our own country, perhaps, as well. I mean, this is a process, and I think its goals are perhaps different than a crime that's committed on the street, you know, one person against one person. I mean, what we're really, I think what the tribunals are trying to do is not just create a record of what took place and a response by a community or by the world, but also trying to constantly seek a way to prevent it from happening again. And I think everybody knows we're not there yet. I mean, as the wars in Sarajevo has been over for 11 years, and look, we're already, here we are in Darfur. You know, we don't have the perfect response to any of this. I mean, I think each forum is an attempt to try to figure out how we can do it better.
Is the fact that judges from outside of the country or those who are sitting on the bench in this court an important way to sort of underscore the fairness of the process as opposed to using judges from within?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to solely use judges from within for a variety of reasons. I mean, these are very, the members of the bench in BIH are very educated members of the judiciary, but it is still a country that is controlled by there are three entities still in that country. It's still, as I understand it, as sensitive today as it was 11 years ago. So it's difficult for them to achieve the level of independence or the perception of that. I think that these are members of the judiciary that have tremendous personal integrity, but it's more important how the community views them. The other issue is that these are judges who've been primarily trained in the civil law system. So I think it's very important for judges who have been common law trained, such as myself, and for other nations that have a common law tradition to be part of the mix.
And let me ask you, you know, obviously you're going to be hearing about some very unpleasant events. You're going to be hearing about war crimes and atrocities. Do you have to brace yourself on an emotional level for what you're about to embark on?
I've been doing work with domestic violence for a long time. That's how I started with my legal career, and have done a lot of work early on with sexual assault. But currently, you know, I'm sitting in family court, which is it's a pretty tough arena. I mean, in some ways, to me, what I look at every day is sort of people who had loved each other who can commit unspeakable acts of cruelty to each other. It's tough. I don't pretend that what I'm doing now will be necessarily the same, and not having done it yet, I don't really know how I'm going to be affected by it. But I just hope, I mean, I feel pretty humbled to be able to even do this. So I hope and I pray that I can bring something to it and walk away from it feeling like I've made a contribution.
Well, Patty, thank you very much and good luck.
Thanks.
Judge Patricia Whelan leaves for Sarajevo in September. She's actually the second Vermonter to serve on a war crimes tribunal in Bosnia. Retired Judge Shireen Fisher also served on the court. We end our show today with a conversation with another Vermonter who is headed to Bosnia. For Emila Begovic, the trip is a homecoming. Begovic fled her native Sarajevo when the city was under siege by the Yugoslav army 12 years ago. Now, Emila is going back, and she told VPR's Susan Keyes her story.
Emila Begovic was cleaning out her office at the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program in Colchester when we talked. She worked there 9 years, starting as a Bosnian language case manager for fellow refugees. On her wall is a framed map showing Sarajevo the way she left it, ringed by tanks and artillery.
In the recent months, said many times that I will take it off. It's about time to, you know, not be looking at it anymore, because it'll always stay in my mind. the bombing, the snipers, the hunger, the living without basic human necessities such as water and electricity and gas and food.
Begovic was 22 and newly married when she and her husband escaped the city in 1995. They came to Vermont through the agency Begovic would later work for.
We left through the underground tunnel. It was built under the airport runway, and that was the only safe way out of the city. And I was very enthusiastic to start a new life, and Burlington felt, you know, so good. It was peaceful and small and beautiful, and our host family was just wonderful. And I jumped head first into work and school and meeting new friends.
She became a U.S. citizen, earned an associate's degree, and had a daughter. But when her marriage ended and she became a single mom, she started feeling very much alone.
Just the fact that all of my family is in Sarajevo, my parents, my brother, my relatives. I have friends here, good friends, you know, that are like my sisters and brothers, but people are much more private here. Everyone has their own life and their own things that they have to do. And then, you know, people work more. So it, you know, got me thinking. People are going back. I mean, I hear of people finding jobs and doing well. So I decided, and now I'm going back.
Begovic started going back to see her parents a few years after the war ended. It took a while for things to improve.
Now it looks like any major city in anywhere in Europe. There's still, you know, burnt buildings, but not very many. There's a lot of foreigners walking around the city because of the foreign aid agencies and embassies, and there's new people in the city that moved to the city after the war because they couldn't stay in their towns or cities.
During the siege, Begovic and her family had to leave their home because their part of the city was occupied. Now her parents have their house back.
In 95, with the Dayton Agreement, the city was, you know, reunited. So they went back. It was safe for them to go back. And the apartment was empty. Just walls, bare walls. Someone saved our photo albums and just left them on the floor. My parents heard that two families lived there over that period. And they took everything.
Were they Serbian families?
Yes. Mm-hmm. My mom has this urge to talk to them. And I mean, what do you say?
And you don't worry about those old hatreds?
Well, I don't want to think about it because I'm trying to really focus on the positive. But to me, it seems like they're under control. But I don't know. Again, I'm not, you know, I'm not there. In a year, I'll be able to answer that question.
Amila Begovic and her daughter leave next week for Sarajevo.
Until last week, Amila Begovic was Direct Services Manager for the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program. She spoke with VPR's Susan Keese. Our program was produced by Sarah Ashworth, Patty Daniels, Susan Keese, and directed by Nick Kaiser. Today, we welcome Tim Johnson to the Vermont Edition team, and we thank Melody Badette for all her hard work and wish her good luck. The executive producer of Vermont Edition is John Van Hoosen, and I'm Steve Zinn.
Thanks for checking out Vermont Edition from Vermont Public Radio. This podcast is made possible by VPR and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a contributing member at vpr.net.